Chapter 12 this morning is where we'll be. Hebrews chapter 12. I really was tempted, I'm not going to lie. I did learn pastor does not let go of grudges, though. I did learn that. The title of my message this morning is That's Close Enough. That's close enough. Has anyone ever used that phrase with you? And maybe it wasn't the most pleasant way. Have you ever been working? Maybe you were working at your job, or maybe you were growing up and trying to do something and trying to impress someone. And you said, hey, look at this. Look what I did. And they're like, yeah, that's close enough. How did that make you feel? Did it make you feel really, really warm and fuzzy, like you'd accomplished something? No, it probably made you feel like, close enough. I'll show you close enough. Close enough is really a bad phrase that many of us use, and maybe if we don't use it, we live by it. And it's a horrible way for us to live. A story goes about a Mr. Darby and his uncle who had a mine out in Colorado. See, they drilled for weeks upon weeks, and they discovered gold. But after a quick return, it ran out pretty fast. So they quit. They sold their mining equipment to a junk man for a few hundred dollars. Because you see, back then, junk men were normally pretty stupid, honestly. But this man was not. He hired an engineer to come do some calculations. After his calculations, he figured out that just 3 feet from where Mr. Darby and his uncle stopped was a massive vein of gold. That junk man went on to become a millionaire, while the Darbys went on to regret it. They quit too soon. They stopped way before they should have. It is always too soon for us to quit. However, there's not just bad illustrations. There are good ones too. This summer, I was able to enjoy watching the professional basketball team I cheer for win the championship. For those of you that know anything about basketball, I'm not a bandwagoner, and I can prove it. To those of you who don't, my team's the best. That's all that matters. But I got to watch them win. And what was really cool was they were not supposed to win this year. From 2015 to 2019, they were actually in the championship game every single year. They were the best team in the world for so long. And they won 3 out of those 5 titles. However, after that, in the 2019 championship game, 2 of their best players basically just went down with massive injuries. One was out for 3 years, the other left to another team. Everybody was talking about how this great team had just crumbled and would never be the same again. But it's interesting looking at interviews from the end of last season, before their victory season, they were asking the players, hey, what's it like now? How's the struggle? How do you feel now? And it was interesting. They weren't frustrated at all. After their final loss of the season, they said, we're coming back next season, and we're going to be better than ever, and we're going to win it all. Those men didn't quit. Everything was against them. All the top sports analysts, the sports geniuses in the world said they're never doing it again. But they came back and won. What's frustrating, though, with that illustration is that it's easy to look out into sports to see men who didn't quit. But can we look in the church for that? Too often, we can't. Hebrews chapter 12 this morning, we'll start in verse 1. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1. Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, lest ye be wearied and faint in your minds. Today, I just want us to look at a few truths from this passage that illustrate how we as Christians must never be content with good enough or close enough in our Christian lives. The first point of the message today is we as Christians need to do some preparation. We have some preparation. Verse 1 starts by telling us we're compassed with so great a cloud of witnesses. Here we're talking about some models of faith. We're referring back to chapter 11. Many of us know it as the Hall of Faith chapter in the Bible. We have examples of men and of women that have just lived for God and served God and done mighty things for Him. We have examples of people that have done it before us. We're not a part of an experiment. This isn't some untested way to live like a random diet that comes out every third Tuesday. This is a tried and true method of living. Moses, Abraham, Joseph, all these men who did mighty things for God. But can we also take a moment to notice that in chapter 11, God doesn't exclude those that messed up. He includes people like Samson. We look at Samson as a failure most of the time. He included David, a man who committed adultery, one of the most heinous sins in our Christian eyes. He included Rahab, who lived as a harlot before salvation. God doesn't just throw us out when we mess up or when we fail. Be encouraged that we're not alone. Others have already done this. It's so easy for us. Maybe it's a younger person thing, but I think not. It's so easy for most of us to feel alone, to get down and into our own little pity parties. But we're not alone. This has been done before, and we have examples of that. So we have models of faith. We have those witnesses. But first, we have to lay aside every weight. Now, weight here in this passage isn't necessarily referring to something bad. Often we as Christians, we read this passage and we say, lay aside every weight and the sin. Okay, I got to get rid of all sin in my life. And that's true. However, sometimes we ignore the weight. We lump those two things together, but really, weight isn't just referring to some horrendous sin or some sinful habit that you can't seem to shake. It's talking about the not bad things in your life that are inhibiting you from running the Christian race the way you should. I don't know if you've ever noticed, but if you watch the Olympics, sometimes it's kind of obvious when you're watching maybe track and you look at those incredibly fast men and women like Usain Bolt and all those, and you see they're very small and they don't normally look like bodybuilders. Why is that? I mean, bodybuilders are in incredible shape. Fabulous shape. Think about it. Their body fat percentages are close to zero. The muscle mass is insane. And muscle's good. We would all agree with this. However, when running a race, all that does is hold them back. A runner can't look like a bodybuilder because then he can't do his job. He can't run the race the way he's supposed to. It was interesting. Elizabeth and I, over the course of my internship, I got to do it at her home church. That was fun. But we got to take the pastor's kids out shopping one day. And we were going through a sports store and passing by the shoes. And I really liked the shoes. So I was pointing them out to Elizabeth. And she found one. I don't know how many of you pay attention to shoes at all. But track spikes are a really unique kind of shoe. They're very light on one end and they're kind of wider at the front. But it was unique because we picked up this one and you tossed it in the air and it almost floated to the ground. It was so light. But it was also unique because in the back of the heel, right back here, there was just maybe a quarter-sized hole in it. And I was like, that's kind of weird. Why is there a hole in the shoe? It's because they were trying to shed more weight. What's interesting is when you're creating a shoe for work, a shoe for safety, or even for sports, the heel is actually one of the most important parts. It's where the structure and support comes from. However, even though it's a good thing, in a race, it's more weight holding those runners back. Good things in our lives can be weights, and those are things we have to get rid of. It takes work to get rid of weight, too. If you've ever tried to diet or work out, well, first of all, let's establish treadmills are from the devil. Can we be honest about that? Those are terrible, but working out takes work. Losing weight takes work. It's not easy. If it's something that's easy, maybe that's not the weight you're supposed to lay aside. It takes work to get rid of weight. So we lay aside our weight, but then we do need to put away our besetting sin. Can you make this verse personal, though? It says, let's lay aside our weights and the sins that beset us. But make that personal. The sin that besets me. The sin that besets you. We need to get rid of it. What's the sin in your life that easily takes you down? What's the one you fight so often? That's the one we have to get rid of. We cannot hold on to it. We can't even make room for it. I want you to imagine something very delicious with me for a moment. I want you to imagine an Oreo cookie, but double stuffed, okay? If it's not double stuffed, it's not good enough. But a delicious Oreo cookie. And if you don't like Oreos, I'm sorry. Imagine carrot cake or something nasty like that. Because if you don't like Oreos, you probably like carrot cake. I feel like that just goes with it. But I want you to imagine an Oreo and that you love Oreos, maybe. Or imagine your favorite dessert. And just imagine that your entire pantry, it is stocked full, floor to ceiling, with double stuffed Oreo packages. Nothing else is in there. And you have just started your keto diet. Actually, I don't really know what keto is. Let's go vegan. You started a vegan diet. That's not going to work out very well. Why? Because you're making room for the thing that is adding to your weight. You're trying to lose weight, but you keep what is hurting you in the house. If you're going to lose weight, the Oreos have to go. The Oreos can't stay in the house, and sin can't stay in your life. Just like those Oreos are just going to add to your weight, no matter what diet you say you're on, sin will hurt you no matter how close you say you are to God. We have to get rid of sin. And you know what's great? We have the power to do so. Through God at salvation, He's given us that power. 1 John 1:9, if we confess our sins, He's faithful and just to forgive us our sins and cleanse us from all unrighteousness. God's given us that power. Sometimes we get so caught up in, I can't get over this. No, you can't. But through God and with God's power, you can. We must get rid of sin. As we prepare, we need to understand, if we don't prepare right, then we're simply preparing to fail. So Christians, we have some preparation we need to do. But secondly, comes our activation. The second part of verse 1 says, we are to run with patience the race that is set before us. Let's look at that phrase, at those phrases. First, we're told to run the race. Back when this passage was written, back in the time of the Greek Olympics, the race was the longest and most important event at the Olympics. Do you know that your Christian race is the most important event of your life? You know, the Olympics had several events. There were tons of events at the Olympics, but the race was the most important one. You know, in your lives, there are tons of events. There are tons of responsibilities, family, job, leisure time, friends, everything. But the Christian race is the most important event in our lives. So we're told to run this race, but we're told to run it with patience. Yuck. I don't know about you, but I don't like patience. Patience isn't easy. Patience doesn't come naturally to, I think, anybody. If you're different, you come preach this, because I can't then. Patience isn't natural to us. And honestly, if we look at it in this sentence, it doesn't even make sense. I mean, who runs a race with patience? That's not how it works. A race is just go, 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 go. But no, we're supposed to be patient. We take our time with this race. A marathon's not won by sprinting. It's not over quickly. It takes time. We need to be in it for the long haul. Galatians 6:9 says, and let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. We need to run with patience. So we run the race, and we run it with patience, but we're supposed to run the race that's set before us. How often do we as Christians get stuck in what's happened behind us in the past? It's easy for all of us. For young people, sometimes it can be more negative. I know I do it. I look behind and at some of the stupid things I've done and say, I'll never recover from that. Or that mistake was too big. It's going to tie me down the rest of my life. Sometimes for those of you who might be a little older, you look to the past for all the good things that there used to be. The problem is, we're both looking in the wrong direction. What's behind us is not where we're going. We need to focus on what's ahead. We can't get hung up on what's behind. For those of you that have driven, you know that in a car, you're supposed to have three mirrors. Now, college student cars, maybe not. But in a car, you're supposed to have a rear view mirror on each side of, on each door, and then you have one in the middle. Well, what are those there for? Those are reference points. You're supposed to look back sometimes. You can say, hey, how am I doing? I'm doing okay. No flashing lights. We're good today. That was a cool run. Those mirrors are there for a purpose. The past is there for a purpose. However, if you stare out the rearview mirror the entire time you're driving, boom, you crash. You crash and burn. Why? Because you weren't looking in the right place. Yeah, we need to check the rearview mirrors, but if we ignore that giant window with the road in front of us, what's going to happen? We need to focus on the race that's set before us. And then finally, in this phrase, we run the race set before us. We're supposed to run our race. We're supposed to focus on our personal race. We're not responsible for the decisions of others. We can't change that. We are held accountable for what we do. Often you hear the excuse with little kids growing up, or with siblings especially, well, Big Brother started it. It doesn't matter. We're not held accountable for what they did. We're supposed to take care of us. We must take care of us and our reactions and our responses. When I was preparing this message, the thought came to me, I don't want to get to heaven one day and be disappointed, and God be disappointed, excuse me, that I did something, and when he asks me why, my only excuse is, well, so-and-so did this. How childish and petty and pathetic would I feel telling God, well, someone else did wrong first. It doesn't matter. We're supposed to focus on our race. So first we have preparation, next comes our activation. But finally, we have to have some concentration. Concentration includes a couple things. It includes both our focus and how we're motivated. So first, our focus. Where is our focus as Christians? We all know the right answer. Our focus is Christ. We look to Christ as our focus. Even with that great list of men and women in chapter 11, we look to Jesus as the ultimate example. How cool is that? You realize we're not like all these other fake religions who look at a dead man or who look at a very flawed individual as their ultimate guide and example and leader. We get to look at the God of the universe who is perfect and mighty and loves us individually. That's what we get to look to. We're not stuck looking at some dude. We get to look at God. We get to look at Christ, who has also run this race before us. I just finished up my final semester of Greek last semester, and it was wonderful, I must say. However, Greek does have some benefits. There are several words in Greek for the same word in English. And it's nice because they're very specific in what they mean. Here we have the word look in verse number 2. The word look in Greek can sometimes mean to glance. Sometimes it means to contemplate or study, but not here. Here, there's actually a very special meaning. It means to stare with awe. We're supposed to stare with awe at Christ. I had the privilege of working at a camp out in Arizona for 4 summers. And what was really cool is we were only an hour and a half or so from the Grand Canyon. So every year we got to go visit. My first year, I'd never been though. And so I think this was my middle high school years. And I got there with a couple other guys that I was working with, and they'd all been there before. So I would not advise this ever with high school people, especially guys. But we get out of the car and we're heading up into Grand Canyon Park. And there's a path that crests a small hill before you can see the Grand Canyon. So we're halfway there, and the guy said, no, hold up, Chad. We want to give you the full experience. So they made me close my eyes, and I don't know what convinced me to do this, but they led me by the hand to the edge of the Grand Canyon, 300 feet right there. Kind of scary. But they lead me to this edge, and first you kind of get this weird sensation that you're just out in the open. There's nothing around. You feel the breeze. It's cool. But then I opened my eyes, and some of the first words out of my mouth were, "That's fake." I don't know those of you that have been there, but when you first see the Grand Canyon, it looks so real that it looks fake. I can't describe it other than that. It is absolutely magnificent. It's a rock. Actually, it's a lack of rock, but it's really cool. It's just amazing. You know what? Every summer, every time I got to go back to the Grand Canyon, it didn't really lose any of that magnificence. But has Christ, to me, over the years, lost his magnificence? Have I lost my focus on the creator of the universe? Is it more easy for me to get wrapped up in the wonderful young lady God has given me than the God who gave me her? The God who made her and me and you, who made this entire earth, where is our focus? The verse says we focus on Jesus as our author and our finisher. Christ is there from beginning to end. He started it, and he's going to finish it. We just have to follow him through the way. We look to Christ. Christ also looked past the pain of his present situation to the reward before him. In my reading for this message, I came across this statement. A man said, "I think that sometimes we're prone to think that the cross was just some sort of duty that Jesus accepted, and that he just thought, it's just a part of life." But no, he despised the shame of the cross. What he went through was unimaginable to us. The way his body was shredded to look like raw meat, the things he went through, being rejected by God the Father, having his back turned, hanging on that cross for who knows how long, in utter agony, begging the night before that God would take that away from him, but ultimately submitting to that. Why on earth did he do that? Why would he put himself through the worst imaginable human torture? Because he looked past now, and he looked ahead. He loved you and I so much, and he looked ahead to the gift that he could offer us, and the joy it brought him to give us that gift. Christ endured that because he loves us, and now he's sitting in heaven again with his Father, preparing a place for you and I. We look to that Christ. So that's our focus. But where's our motivation? It's the same place. Consider him who endured such contradiction of sinners, verse 3 goes. We look at Christ and we look at his life. He lived a life of love, kindness, powerful works, and constantly blessing others. And yet, people still wanted to kill him. Another author I read said, one time when they took up stones to kill him, he said, and he's paraphrasing, "Hey, I've done a lot of good things. I've healed the blind. I've caused the lame to walk. I've restored life to the dead. So which one of those things are you going to stone me for now?" Wow. Christ lived that life. A life of perfect love, perfect kindness, perfect patience. And people wanted to murder him. Why do we think we should be any better off? There are going to be times we get discouraged. Church family, as I've been able to watch you go through difficult things over my short time here, I've been encouraged. Some of you have gone through incredible things. don't quit. There are going to be hard times. I know I'm only 21. I've been through a couple. I've almost lost my dad twice to cancer. Those weren't easy times. You know, all of us have struggles. All of us have hard times. It doesn't matter how big or small that hard time might look. What matters is we don't quit and we allow God to use those hard times. Christ is our example because he endured the cross. And we can endure pain here on earth as well because of it. John 16:33. These things I have spoken unto you, that in me ye might have peace. In the world ye shall have tribulation. It's guaranteed for us to have some troubles. But be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. That's Christ talking. That's our omnipotent creator who loves us talking. Don't get discouraged. Just look to Christ. So we've looked at some preparation we have to do. We've looked at our activation and we've looked at our concentration. Where's our focus? Where do we get our motivation? So in closing, let me share this story with you. It was 1952 and a young lady waded into the Pacific Ocean. Her name was Florence Chadwick. She was ready to break yet another record in her life. Because at that point, no woman had ever crossed the channel between Catalina Island and the California coast. Now, she was not new to this. She was actually a very seasoned long-distance competitor. She was the first woman to swim the English Channel in both directions. Excuse me. But this was different. This was a 26-mile stretch of water. And the conditions that July morning were far from optimal. The water was incredibly cold and a thick blanket of fog had settled in. And to make it a little bit worse, there were sharks that wanted to follow her and had to be driven off her course several times. But Florence had a coach and her family following along in a small boat, cheering her on. But it was foggy, very foggy that morning. And even when she'd been swimming for 15 hours, she still couldn't see the shoreline. She was discouraged and tired, worn out. She finally took her last stroke. She told her family she just couldn't go on anymore. So she quit. They pulled her aboard the boat and she collapsed with exhaustion. But as it turned out, she quit far too soon. You see, she swam 25 and a half miles. But because she couldn't see the end, she gave up. She fell short of her goal by just a half mile. I don't think anyone in this room would have the nerve to tell her, hey, that's close enough. No. Why? I mean, look at the amount she swam compared to what she didn't. The ratio is incredible. She swam 25 and a half miles and only didn't swim a half mile. But all of us understand it doesn't matter that she didn't swim that last or that she got that far because she didn't finish. Now, thankfully, the story doesn't end there. Just a couple weeks later, she swam that. She finished her race. She accomplished her goal. Are we going to? Or are we going to quit? Are we going to accomplish our goal? Are we going to run our race and finish our course? Because, Christian, it is always too soon to quit. Pastor.